This has been a Sell or Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to gittimerlearningacademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also...
Jeffrey, what's that in your coffee cup?
What do you think it is, Jen? It's Death Wish coffee. It's the only coffee I drink. Death Wish is the world's strongest coffee, and the world's strongest salesperson needs the world's strongest coffee.
Jeffrey and I drink it, and diehards, you need to be drinking it too. It'll help you wake up and smell the order forms. They have 100% no bullshit money back guarantee, so go get your first bag or first box of K-Cups of the world's strongest coffee at deathwishcoffee.com.
So what does an order form smell like? It's Friday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time for the best of Sell or Die.
The best nuggets of sales wisdom every week, all in one place.
A sales slap in the face. A sales refresher.
I feel refreshed.
I can tell. And if you want to go back and listen to the full episodes, we've made it easy. There are links to each of the episodes right in the show notes.
If you love the podcast, if you're a true seller diehard, and you haven't given us a 5-star review on iTunes yet,
what are you waiting for?
Seriously, Friday is the best day to do it. It helps us so that we can help you.
It's time for the best of the best, the cream of the crop, the creme de la creme, sales grade A red meat. It's time
to sell or die.
The great Tiffany Bova.
So now I want you to think, and this is an age-old argument, I'm happy to get into it, but, is sales learned or, is it nurtured or did you born with it? Yeah. That's a whole debate probably for another show, but I believe the A sellers are born with it. It doesn't mean that people who learn it can't hit quota. It has everything to do with this personality. And so how do you draw out those that are much more customer-led than I'm here to make a paycheck-led, right?
And for those of you diehards that don't think you're born with it, you're born with a personality.
Yes.
And then you learn the fundamentals and the science. Selling is not an art. It's a science. You learn the science of selling so that you can replicate what it is that you're doing that makes you successful. Born with means that you have basic intelligence, that maybe your parents were smart, that you're a hard worker and the soft things that go with it. But then you have to learn the principles of selling in order to be able to really achieve.
Yeah. And I use Tiger Woods as an example. He was born to have a golf club in his hand. No question. Or Michelle Wee, right? Born to have a golf club in their hand. And I could take golf lessons every day, 8 hours a day for the next 3 years. And I might become a scratch golfer, right? Which means that I sort of shoot par. And I might take your money on Sundays, but I'll never make tour because that was not what I was necessarily born to do. And I feel that way about selling. I feel like it matches what I was born with and my personality. And I had really great coaches and teachers along the way. And more importantly, I'm a student of my profession of being a seller. So I constantly wanted to go and stretch myself to learn. So podcasts, books, talking to people, seminars, I was all about every day, how do I get better? One thing a day I would do to hone my skill of selling.
I'm going to just challenge you diehards right now. Write down what you were born to do. Take a minute and write down what you think you were born to do. I'm going to also throw one more tip at you. When we were waiting for Tiffany to come on, she had us turned off, the sound turned off until the exact time of the interview. And in the meantime, she was typing her ass off to be able to do something else before the interview. She showed up 10 minutes early, which is the right thing to do. And then she worked until the 9 minutes till the 1 minute.
Until we were ready.
Yeah. Okay. So understand that Orison Swett Marden in 1908 wrote, "Never underestimate the value of the use of spare minutes." And here's a woman who totally took advantage of those spare minutes. It's none of our business what you were writing. Maybe you were ordering something on jet.com and didn't even know it. But but the bottom line was she was working rather than checking
just
up
checking
on her
Instagram.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh yeah, and I think, you know, people today, and now I spend my days keeping a pulse on what's sort of going on in the market. I sort of get paid to be the student of what it is that I do. And so I get to talk to lots of customers. I consume a lot of content from all kinds of sources, and I sort of aggregate it, and I come back out with what's the story that this is trying to tell the market, and how do I do that? So people say all the time, you know, I just don't have time, and this is my full-time job. So I was actually responding to, you know, a question from one of our sales guys from Salesforce asking me, hey, you know, how do I do something in a particular deal? And I was giving them sort of some advice. So coming back and saying, you have to find the time. I know as sellers, our time is so valuable, but right now, I guarantee you an average of 50, 55% of your time is in non-selling activities. Mm-hmm. So if you can't free up some of your time by using technology in order to take some of that off your plate, you're never going to have enough time in the day to spend that half hour or an hour like I used to hone your skills and whatever that might be. It could be taking, you know, listening to a podcast about empathy or EQ. Like, how do I improve the soft side of my selling skills? How do I improve using whatever tools I am? I'm going to watch a YouTube video or use a Trailhead if you're with Salesforce, and I'm going to go learn how to do something different in the tool so I can free up some of that 55% time.
Please help me welcome the great Kyle Wilson.
And Jeffrey, here's the key, right? Because this is sell or die. For me, selling is about fishing, right? Versus hunting. And so my whole thing is, how do I get people on the wheel and just talk to them? Mm. Like, you have your weekly
get them on the hook, don't kill them. Mm-hmm. That's what you're saying, correct?
Yeah.
Give them the bait.
Right. And the bait was the book.
Will you attract who, you know, like for me, I don't have an agenda. It's like, if they want to come to an event, great. If they want to come to a inner circle, great. If they want me to coach them, great. But all I'm doing is putting out good stuff to people who are interested, and they pick what they want, which is very different than a lot of the funnels that are being taught. So the wheel is a whole philosophy about getting people on a list and talking to them and bringing great value and putting good stuff out, and then certain things they're going to be interested in.
One of the things that Jim Rohn did, and this is pretty amazing, he would talk all day for 2 days. Literally all day for 2 days, never repeat himself, and never sold anything from the platform, never said one word about his books or his tapes or anything, and people bought the shit out of it in the back of the room, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, I carried The Art of Exceptional Living cassette tapes in my trunk for a decade. They were my go-to. Anytime I wanted something that would give me just a little bit of a kick in the ass, there you could plug it in and play it any place. And
I almost remember selling you cases of at a time, right?
Yeah, it's true. I give them away to everybody.
Jeffrey would constantly, at least two different times, you promote it nationwide through the business journals, how to get a quote book, right?
Yeah.
They would fax to me, you know, back in the days, exactly. Right?
The fax back
rule. But I wrote two articles about Jim Rohn and some of his quotes and what he did and how he did it, because I was so freaking inspired that I couldn't stand not writing about it.
And I'm pretty sure, Jeffrey, when we met, you'd never heard Jim Rohn.
Correct.
I think that's the case.
That is correct. The first time I ever heard him was in Charlotte when he spoke.
Yeah. Yeah,
oh, wow.
At that event that you emceed. And that always means a lot to me, too. It's like when you, Darren Hardy, different people, like I remember Harvey McKay, who's your good friend.
Yeah.
I wanted to get Harvey's testimonial for the Treasury of Quotes. And I'd met Harvey a couple of times. And me being a promoter, right, he was all over it. He had never heard of Jim Rohn. And, of course, you know, Harvey more – you know, in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. And I finally got him to go. He was going to be in Atlanta, and I had Jim speak in Atlanta. I got him to go, and he came back and he gave me the most amazing testimonial.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's the thing that would always, again, I'm into philosophy and, you know, what gets people turned on. And the fact you were so inspired by Jim, Darren was, Harvey was, that told me a lot about you. It told me you're philosophically driven. And, you know, for the Art of Exceptional Living, you and I both know it's phenomenal, right? But some people don't care for it. And I'm like, that's okay, but I'm probably not going to go to dinner with them either, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, if you can't be inspired by the information, for you diehards out there, you can go online. You can just Google in The Art of Exceptional Living. Someone's still selling it. There's probably
and the challenge to succeed as well, yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah. The challenge to succeed, of course. But my go-to – I'm a guy who's lived his life by Napoleon Hill, by everybody who preceded Napoleon Hill, Orison Swett Marden, Samuel Smiles, you name it. Jim Rohn hit my knowledge bone, and he did it every single frickin' time without fail. And I'd like to, if it's possible, just share one story.
Sure.
I was at the Hotel Kempinski doing a seminar for some client in Dallas. And it was after I'd already become a total Jim Rohn devotee, and we had spoken together, and I knew him, and, you know, so, and I see the sign says, Jim Rohn here today. I'm like, seriously? So I go where he's speaking, and he was speaking to an Herbalife group.
Right.
And there were maybe 50 people in the room. And he's talking his ass off. And I'm sitting in the back of the room waiting for him to stop. And he finishes the seminar, and I go up to him, and I go, okay, I've been to a half a dozen of your weekends, 5,000 people in the room. How the hell do you get excited about talking to 50 people? And he said, Jeffrey, and this, by the way, it's the only time I ever heard him out of his character, because he was always in Jim Rohn,
right,
what I mean.
True.
He said, Jeffrey, you never know who's in the audience. He said, one day I gave a talk to 19 people, and one of them was Tony Robbins.
There you go.
And
that's
literally
a great story, my friend.
Oh, and my blood ran cold. Because if you listen to Tony Robbins and you don't hear Jim Rohn, you ain't listening.
Say hello to Christian.
The number one problem I see with our interns are they're just robots. They're immediately like, hey, I'm Christian, I'm with Ruza, yada, yada, yada. They don't slow down and do the antithesis of a used car salesperson and just ask the person how they're doing and say something funny and break the ice and actually establish a connection so their guard goes down because it is a cold call.
It's a cold,
so the first thing I ask is, hey, how are you? And they'll tell me how they are and I respond in the same type of manner, and I'll try to say, I see you got a good attack dog there. Comment on the university sticker on the back of their car. Just try to, you know, lighten the feels.
And then you give them a little plastic bag with a bug in it.
Yeah, I found that's the wrong way to sell.
Oh. Okay, wait, so let's go back. So,
all right, there are some people who have been known to actually place bugs on the doorstep.
Oh, how pleasant.
Oh,
yeah, but
there are
people who play the inspector role who like Solomon, for instance, he has a glue board and he'll actually collect spiders and attach their legs to the glue board. And he'll show them when the time's appropriate if there's certain poisonous spiders in the neighborhood.
Oh.
Yeah.
I saw a snake 2 days ago. I was really creeped out. Anyway, Jeffrey had asked you, and I think we cut you off a little bit, but what you look for when you're recruiting. So the first thing you said was willingness to learn. What else do you look for?
Risk, willing to take a risk because it's a commission job.
Yeah, because if they're totally not interested in it, you know they'd just rather stay at home all summer and have their parents cook every meal and they play Fortnite the whole time.
Right, right.
So we look for that willingness, that hunger. I think anyone can be successful at this as long as they work hard. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like an athlete. They have a natural talent. And for salespeople, it's the gift of gab. It's communication. But then there's also hard work. So some people are great communicators, but they don't work hard. And they're very talented, but they don't work hard during the summer. And they'll do average. Some people work super hard, but they're not very talented. They'll do average. But if you find someone who's talented, has good nonverbals, you know, smiles, eye contact when they're talking to you, and then if he can take that skill and that talent and also work hard, those are our best sales reps. So we can kind of tell if people have that skill when we interview with them.
I think if I was a millennial right now, cold calling, or I was a young person. I don't want to castigate any the whole society because some are Gen Zs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think I'm the cutoff for to be a millennial.
Yeah.
1994.
Yeah. You were born in 1994?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think I would go up to someone's door and I would hold them up a text and say that says, I'd rather text than talk. How are you today?
Yep.
And they would go, fine. Did you want to text me back or did you want to just
– Oh, yeah.
And now you have their cell phone if they play.
Yeah. Well, they have those Sky Bells now, the rings where you press the button and they just answer through the doorbell.
Yeah, and they're somewhere else.
I pitch doorbells as much as I pitch humans.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Not quite as much.
So the doorbell is like the new gatekeeper.
Yeah.
The ring.
It's a gatekeeper.
And do you say, hi, my name is Christian and I am a Christian?
Oh, people make that joke all the time. Yeah. They're like, well, are you Christian?
And you say,
say yes.
Yeah. Look, what do you think? I have white Anglo-Saxon Protestant written all over my face.
Oh, Jeffrey. All right, so switching gears. Tell us about your philosophy on learning.
Yeah.
Learning to sell.
I think a lot of people, they don't try to acquire a skill while they're in college. They'll just go through the motions. And I don't mind having fun in college. I had tons of fun in college. But they don't pursue something else besides academia.
College presents no urgency. I'm here like I went to high school. I had to go. I'm in college, but I'm not really directed yet. I don't really have – I'm not going to be – most people, if they're going to be a doctor, they're directed. Or they want to be a lawyer or something, they're directed. But 90%+ of the people don't have that same urgency, don't have that same direction. They're still partying on Friday, partying on Saturday, and scraping their ass to school on Monday.
It's a self-created urgency. Like thinking back to when I was in college, I created that urgency for myself to want to have jobs, to want to succeed, and to know what I was going to do after I graduated.
But
I
that's mean, the 1% that Christian wants to have come work for him.
People need to know that it's okay to risk and fail while they're in college. Maybe not at academics, but try other things and risk and fail. I think the problem with our generation is parents raise their kids way too cautiously. They're like, don't take risks, don't fail. They don't kind of let them go off on their own and
did
try
you
these
fail?
Things.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've saved up all my money that I worked for in college, and I bought 500 pairs of socks that I designed customly that said, I love the Dub. And they were socks I was going to sell to my fellow college students when I got to Wilmington, because Wilmington's the Dub. And I failed miserably and had a whole thing of socks and ended up giving socks out for free. So I wasted that money.
Oh, my God.
I've had plenty of failures.
I did something
plenty
similar.
Of failures.
Go ahead.
Like success is not this perpetual straight line that moves up. It's like this. It goes up and back down, up and back down. If you're not going down in your life and failing, you're not going to rise up.
But you learned from that failure, and that was the key.
That's exactly right. And I don't think our generation seeks enough adventure and risk to learn how to fail.
This has been a Seller Die Extra. If you like it and you like the show and you like all the information that's inside of it, go to thegittimerlearningacademy.com and subscribe. What are you doing? What's this noise?
I'm going to GettoverLearningAcademy.com to subscribe.
Way to go. Way to go. You can also subscribe to Sell or Die on Overcast if you have an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to the store and get an iPhone. Or if you don't, go to iTunes or Stitcher and come back every single Tuesday for a full Sell or Die episode with expert sales analysis that will help you do the one thing you're hoping for, make more sales.